Welcome to chapter 41, the dice table. This may be the best chapter that demonstrates the title of this audio book, No Place for Common Sense, because common sense and becoming addicted to the dice table are two entirely different topics. There is nothing about gambling that has anything to do with common sense, but it has to do with fun. And that I cannot deny. The thing about the dice table for me is that once I got introduced to it by what I thought was a good friend of mine, Bob Gallagher, back in the late 70s, is that I love the speed of the game. And for some very unusual, bizarre reason, I found myself being able to keep track of everybody's bets in a very fast-moving game. And that at the same time where I couldn't tell you where my car was parked. But I've always been intrigued by mathematics, and sometimes the dealers would be, a little perturbed at me if I saw somebody that got underpaid with the odds that on a particular roll. But I always treated them. I bet for the dice, for the table, the stick people. So I was always kind of in their good graces, but I could tell that they were mildly irritated when I would say, listen, shouldn't have you gotten paid X instead of Y? Anyway, it has been an integral, it is an integral part of my life and has been, and it's been a lot of fun. And one of the things that really, I enjoyed it and I got my money's worth, if you want to call it that, at least that's how I rationalize it. What always amazed me is seeing people with a lot of money betting, I mean, literally thousands of dollars per roll, and they were bored. I mean, I don't know. I couldn't understand that. If you're going to, you know, why not just throw the money up in the air and have a whole lot of people jumping up and down having fun, because they weren't having any fun. I had fun. For every dollar I lost, and there was a lot of them, I enjoyed myself. The only time I didn't have a good time is if I lost, you know, too quick. I didn't like that. I wanted to play. And I realized later on in life, I never really went to the casino, to the dice table, to win. I went for the action. Prior to getting addicted myself to the dice table, I always thought somehow the people that had addictions, whether it be gambling or drugs or alcohol or whatever, that there was some kind of a character weakness or a lack of intelligence or something until I got it. And then I had to reevaluate everybody that I thought of that maybe was, you know, could have controlled it when I myself. It's interesting. Once you're in another person's shoes, you tend to see things a little differently. But there was one thing that was my life raft, so to speak, and that is, growing up, my father was a big believer in paying for things you want, saving for them, and then paying cash. Thought that you know, if you borrow money to buy something, then it's really not yours until you pay it off. So I really grew up in a cash only environment, and frankly, that kept me, on a very serious note, that kept me from being a street person, because I would have lost. There's no question in my mind that I would have lost everything I had, and I would have had a wholly different second half of my life, so to speak. But I never took a marker, even though, you know, I was offered it at times. But offering me a marker, it was like somebody coming up and talking in a foreign language. It never even registered to the point where I would consider it. It didn't register in my brain, in that part of my brain. So that was it. The other thing is that I had a good time. I had a lot of experiences there, and I'm just going to give you one short one, and then I'm going to give three stories from the dice table. But before I get to that, I went to the table with a friend of mine whose sister and her husband were up from Atlanta. This was early on, like in the early 80s or thereabouts, and the sister was fighting ovarian cancer, and had been. And anyway, they came to Atlantic City. I took them to the dice table. And basically, my idea of taking somebody to the dice table, as I mentioned with Mary Dyson, I front the money. And most of the people I've ever taken there had never been to a dice table before. And hope to God they never went back. They didn't even know what they were doing, which is a good thing. Don't learn. Some things, if you learn, that's not a good thing. And this was one case, definitely. Anyway, so I front the money, and they roll. Whatever. If they win, they keep the winnings. If they don't, then we move on to dinner. It's no harm, no foul. This particular night, this person, I was out of control as usual, and this person had a decent roll, and I don't know, maybe $100, $200. I'll never forget at the end of this, when we were walking away from the table, she came up to me and said, you know, this is the first time in over a year that I forgot I had cancer. And that struck me. I thought, you know what, that was a good thing. And she passed about 6 months later. But anyway, when you get up into a role, it's like surrealistic. You expect you're never going to crap out, and I've been there. And it just happens maybe 3-4 times a year, tops, and it's enough to keep you addicted. I'm going to start these three stories with a story about myself that I'm not proud of. I look back, and I was stupid, and I was, you name it, and I was it. But I think it's important to know that no matter how smart you think you are, you ain't when it comes to an addiction. This particular weekend, I lost more than I'd ever lost before or since. I lost $10,000 over a weekend, and I was in free fall, literally. Nothing was working. So I decided I got to stop. So I said, you know, I got to go buy something. I have to have something to show for the money somewhere. So I was in Caesars, so I went upstairs, and they had a men's store, a high-end men's store called OG's, O-G-G-I. And I went in there, and I spent the next, I don't know, I guess hour, buying clothes. And the owner there, you know, he said, after he heard my story, and I said, I got to stop this free fall. I'm just, the bleeding, I got to stop the bleeding. I got to buy something, so at least when I go home, I've gotten something to show for this weekend. Well, he said, you know, we've been open since the beginning, the casino opening. We never had anybody in here that is buying things because they lost. I said, well, that's where I'm at. So anyway, I bought some really serious clothes. But it's interesting, on the way home, and ever since, all the money I spent, all the things I bought and whatever, I bought 4 ties there. They were $200 a piece. I'm not telling this part of it to impress anybody. It's just $200. I remember when I was in grade school, I think I had a clip-on tie that was like 75 cents. And for some reason, I couldn't get that out of my mind. How could I spend $200 on a tie? Here's the interesting part. When I was buying these ties, among other things, the guy in the shop in OG said to me, you know, Jimmy, he says, anytime you wear these ties, you're going to get comments. He was right. Ever since. And that wasn't the only thing. I bought a jacket, and he said, you're going to get a comment. They carry things that nobody else had. And anyway, I wanted to share that because I'm not proud of that time, but I think in any kind of a story, it needs to have some reality base. And that was my wake up call. And I never, never lost that amount again. I lost and played for many years and still play, but nowhere near like I did. But the other thing that I want to, before I go to the second story, is that to show you how crazy it was for me at that time, I actually had the Claridge Casino. They had a place in the casino for my 10-speed bike. I would bike over in the morning. I would walk back over in the afternoon, and I would use the car, limo, or whatever at night. Now, that is somebody who has a sickness. Anyway, story number two. This is a lot. This is a happy story. And it has to do with Kathy's mother. But before I tell you the dice table story, I need to share with you how I met her. And this was a unique experience in itself. When I found out that I was going to meet Kathy's mother and her family, they lived outside of Scranton in a place called Carbondale. She grew up on a farm, Kathy. So anyway, I'm kind of anticipatory of this. So we arranged to have a dinner at the place called the Mendenhall Inn, which was a kind of a quiet, you know, low-key place. Even had a violin player going around the tables. So anyway, we're sitting there, all of us, you know, having dinner. It's about, you know, six or eight of us, I forgot. Anyway, Kathy's brother Martin, who Vietnam vet, Gulf War vet, and one of my favorite people as years have gone by. He and I, the first time I met him and his wife, and like I said, Kathy's mother. Anyway, he and I got into what I will call, I won't say an argument, a spirited exchange. And I will never forget what her mother turned to her son, Kathy's brother Martin, and said the following: "Wait till he pays." I thought to myself, I have never, with the exception of maybe Jack Earnshaw, when he had a comment about the level of my intelligence when I told him how much I had paid for Mom's necklace. But when Kathy's mother, Laverna, made that comment to her son, I thought, here is pure, unadulterated truth. I loved her from that point on. And when she passed, I got up in front of the congregation and related that story. That's a story few people ever can duplicate in terms of just one sentence, says it all. You don't get that kind of honesty in life. Or if you do, it doesn't come along very often. Now, my third and last, I'm sorry, let me back up a second. I take Laverna to the dice table. This was years later. And she, as usual, like everybody else, she'd never been there before. I put some money down. She started rolling. Oh, my Lord, she had a roll. And every time she would roll, you know, of course, now more and more people were getting fired up over it. You know, there's yelling, and she's keep asking me, you know, how am I doing? I said, listen, until I start screaming at you and not at the dice, you're doing good. Well, she was, at this point, sweating profusely, and she had a roll. And we started with red chips, which were $5 chips, moved to green chips, which were $25 chips. And in the last, 10, 15 minutes, she started winning black chips, which are $100 chips. And I mean, when it was over, she got a serious round of applause. And I'm guessing she won close to $1,000. And I mean, she was physically, mentally, and emotionally exhausted. But that was one of those cool nights when a memory is priceless. And here I am remembering about something that happened a long time ago. And I'm sure that for the rest of her life, she never forgot that experience. Now we go to number three. This was the only time I ever borrowed money at the casino. I had a friend, Pat Levecki, who I mentioned him. He was with my dad and I when we went to the Martin Marietta cement plant opening or ribbon cutting. Anyway, he comes by, and I didn't expect him. He stopped in at my place down the shore, and we went out and had a drink or two. And we decided, let's go to the casino. I said, well, I don't have any cash for me. He said, look, I'll lend you $500. He lends me $500. Isn't it? I had the best roll of my life. But because it was borrowed money, I played conservatively, which is not my style. I usually press the bets, and that's not the smartest thing to do, but that's what got me to be able to afford to go there, pressing in life. So anyway, I had a most serious role. And I wound up winning. Don't misunderstand. I gave him the $500 back, and I won $1,200. I'll never forget this. So I was, but it was the best role. So, and I would have won, God knows how much, if I would, in my normal mode. Anyway, we go out on the boardwalk, and I see this guy coming down selling these gold bracelets. So I would give the guy $100, and I pick out a gold bracelet. Now, they've been selling these gold bracelets on the boardwalk forever. So my buddy, Pat, and his cousin was with us, and they just started laughing. I said, you know, they're laughing. I said, you know, that's, you can buy them in a, you get them in a Wheaties box. I said, I didn't buy it as an investment. I bought it as a, to memorialize tonight, because this was the best role I'd ever had up to that point, certainly. So they were on me the whole rest of the night about what, you know, I just pissed away $100. So, I don't know, I'm back home again a couple of weeks. I said, you know what, I had occasion to go to a local jewelry store, and I brought it with me. Anyway, make a long story short, it was real. It was worth about $2,500, the jeweler estimated. Well, I called him up. He says, you know what, you're the only person in the history of Atlantic City that bought one of those gold bracelets from that guy that turned out to be real. He said, only you can do that. I said, listen, I didn't even buy her that. I just bought it as a memento. Anyway, that's my dice story, saga. And its contribution to the audio book. Thank you. Next up, payback as a positive.